listens here said she had some recommendations.
Oh boy, we have critiques.
Yeah, she said on the intro, maybe don't play the music so long.
Oh, you have music?
You didn't even do your homework.
This is going to be my normal tone of voice.
You got some brew? Yeah, what you working on over there?
This is some Maker's Mark in my little elk glass.
Did you all, are you all Maker's Ambassadors?
I am.
No.
Did you get the thing for they're about to start bottling the Maker's like cask grade or something like that?
No. Yeah, I said it.
Rude.
Do I want to get a whiskey, man? I want to, but I don't want to go through the process of making it.
What are you making? Do you got a distillery?
Drink it from the bottle.
Drink it from the bottle. I could do that with my Blanton's. It's almost gone.
Don't have to be gone.
Okay,
I mean, it's not like you're going to be taking pulls from it, hopefully. Those things are so fascinating.
Glory holes?
Yeah. I've never seen one in person.
Well, would you ever put your penis through one? Brandon's nodding his head yes.
Well, I don't know the last time I was in a unisex bathroom either, outside of someone's
house. It's not
about
the unisex. I think that glory holes, most of the time, that what's on the other end, if you put your penis through it, you're taking the risk, and I think you understand that.
What risk?
Well, what if you...
That you don't know what's going to put their mouth on your penis. I would never use one. I'm just going to put that out there.
I think taking the risk out of it is crucial.
If it's a controlled setting.
Of course taking the risk out of it is crucial.
What
but
if,
the user of a glory hole doesn't care.
What if, just imagine this, like the wall right here is the wall, the hole. You're just like up against it, like your chest is essentially touching the wall. You've got either a camera or a mirror or something so that you see on the other side.
No, that defeats the whole purpose.
Is that like heighten things?
That defeats
because you're
the
looking at yourself
the whole purpose.
In a different angle?
Oh, to yourself. I thought you meant to be able to see the other side.
Well, you're looking down, so what you're seeing in there is the other side of the wall.
No, you don't want the other side of the wall. That defeats the entire purpose of a glory hole.
The idea of a glory hole is that you can have access to someone else's private parts without having
seen
to
them.
See them or interact with them in any way.
Well. Hang on. Are you talking from the inserter or from the receivers?
Both.
Either way.
Well, it's not for the receiver to see.
But it's not for anyone to see.
It's like the whole thing watching yourself on camera. It's the exact same thing.
You can't have it to where you see them and they don't see you. Because if you can see them, they would equally be able to look up and see you.
But theoretically, they are not going to be in the position to look backwards at a mirror that you're just looking directly at.
Halt! Because that's obviously what's going to have opened the show, which means... We should stop and tell everybody who is now an official, solid, 100% member without any arguments or conversations about it, member of Indifferent Opinions.
Charles Barkley!
So, well, let's cheers to Brandon,
yeah,
the newest
member.
Because if you're going to argue, every argument needs a tiebreaker. All it is it's like we were missing a piece. It's not like you're a part of it. It's that we started without the whole, you know?
Oh, wow. That's an honor, Matt. Thank you so much.
But you already know that. Okay, so Andy said he wants to open things up.
Yeah, I might as well go on and say my first point. So today at work, I accomplished something that I think you have to think about to really appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
And given what we opened with, I'll go on and go with it since it's kind of the same color. I managed to hold back a fart while I was peeing. And I want you to think about what that entails.
That's complicated.
That's not easy.
That's tough.
That's like an internal breathing adjustment. It's all kinds of things to turn on and turn off. And like, as I was doing it, I kind of wondered, am I going to be able to see this through to the end?
So what? Why did you need to hide your fart?
Yes. That is my question as well.
I'm not the type to walk into the bathroom guns blazing.
So you're just being courteous. It's not like your boss was like standing at the urinal next to you.
No. Our bathroom, actually, there aren't urinals. There's only two. Oh, that just reminded me.
Have you
There's
been
only
going to the
two
women's
stalls.
By accident?
No, but that's the thing. So I walked in for the first time yesterday, and I saw that there was a stall on the left and a stall on the right. And I kind of stood there for like 2 seconds, and I looked around, and I actually walked back out the door and looked and checked to make sure I was in the men's.
Really?
I think. Yeah.
Wow.
Because I've done that before. It was It was at a Cracker Barrel, but I did it. I didn't know I was in the women's tile walked out.
You know what really bothers me is places that try to get cute with like you know, like ladies and gents, and then like, you know, like,
oh yeah,
lassies and lads, and it's like all of a sudden you get to these ones where you're like kind of got to stop and be like, oh, the fuck, which one is what?
Yep.
The ones at bars when it's dark and you really don't care that much to begin with.
Yeah, well, at a bar, it shouldn't ever exist. Like, that's what I love about New York bars. I don't know if it's only in New York, but, like, where you have, like, a hallway and, like, five different single toilet stalls, you know, with, like, doors. It's like, these are all toilets, we all use them, and you just wait. But, like, each individual one, you still have privacy, but, like, it's men or women.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the best.
I don't remember any of those.
Oh, man, they're everywhere. They're like the common, like, 5 Mile Stone had them, Brandon, but, like, they're just like a little hall and then like three or four doors. And then like you just lock the door. Like it's individuals, you know, like Meatball Shop has them. Most places have them.
In my neighborhood up here in the Harlem, the Grange has the same idea. There's like three bathrooms and then there's actually a sink that is actually like a trough.
Right.
Sink yeah. that everyone comes out and washes their hands under.
It's always way quicker.
Very communal. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I think you shouldn't have to worry anymore about that kind of stuff. I just think that, especially at a bar, you shouldn't have to care. Like, right. In a bar situation,
it's even more important. I could see where that goes both ways, though, because you don't want some dude that's a little liquored up walking in and
no, but that's a why
girl having walked in before him.
That's why you have them just be solo. So, like, a girl can have her privacy, but if you don't like one, you can just step out and go into another one. You know what I mean? I'm sure it's worse for girls. Like, we like it because it's fast. But, like, for a girl, it probably sucks because it means guys are just pissing all over toilet seats and they have to deal with it.
Yeah, I think women are going to have a lot more negatives than guys would in that situation.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's just true of bathrooms in general. Like, anytime they're like, if they're using it correctly, they have to put their, like, body parts on a public toilet. Like, do you ever think about that? Every time a girl uses a toilet, she has to touch the surface.
Most of them hover.
A lot of them hover.
Most of the time at a bar. But I'm saying that sucks that they have to change the way they pee into like a less predictable manner.
You know what I hate?
Huh. Jews.
That's stall doors open in.
Yeah.
So like you're rubbing the back of your pant legs up against the front of the toilet.
That happened to me yesterday. I thought about it. It grossed me out.
I hate that. Like, yeah. Why do you need to worry about a fire hazard in a bathroom?
Well, it's not that so much as I think they don't want you swinging open and hitting people. Like, yep. You're in control of how you open a door, but if you throw it open, you're smacking
somebody. For those who feel inclined to kick it open.
I mean, think about how often it'd be you lose control and you smack someone in the face with the door. Like, I get it.
Yeah, because you have no idea what you're opening out onto.
Directly behind the...
The worst is in an airport bathroom when you have, like, a suitcase and you have to, like, slide it around and then, like, shimmy and then close the door.
Every bathroom in an airport should be, like, handicapped.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, like the size.
You are actually forced to take your luggage with you. There is no choosing. So you can't leave it behind.
Exactly. Otherwise, they'll confiscate it and think it's a bomb.
Yeah.
I guess you can leave it on the sink.
I take the risk, actually, though, if I'm traveling solo. Like, I've left my bag in a chair and just, like, sprinted to the bathroom because I had an awesome seat.
I don't think the risk is for your stuff. I think that's for you getting on a plane is the bigger risk.
Well, no. I mean, the problem is... It's like they'll send in like the bomb squad.
Like, no, that's what I'm saying. It's not like you're gonna lose your seat. Like they see you on camera do that, they're gonna be like, "This guy comes back, he's flagged."
Yeah, I mean, four years I've been good so far. I mean, typically if I can, I'll turn to someone. They're supposed to say no, but like I'll be like, "Can you just keep an eye on my bag?" You know what I mean? But like, it sucks when you get that perfect seat that's near the Chargers and you're on the end, and then you have to pee. And, like, I'm not trying to sacrifice all that. I'd rather risk my shit being stolen or being put on the blacklist. It's worth it to me.
I think we have very different airport experiences, or at least routines.
Why? What's that?
You had something stolen before?
I don't feel like I'm ever really posted up in a way that I need my seat.
Oh, I am. In New York airports, every like, seat ends up taken up.
It's quite the
production. Yeah, but just how early do you get there, though?
I'm an early guy.
Like walk around, I usually have myself an hour.
Yeah.
The airport here is really nice. So like they've got all kinds of shops. They've got some really nice like men's clothing
shops.
Yeah,
I mean, there are shops, but I'd rather like post up and be listening to a podcast or watching something. Like I'm comfortable being at my gate where I know I'm where I need to be, and then like every other stress is done.
Yep.
So that's why. And then my shit's charging, so I'm not going to know it's going to die when I get there. Like, I like to be posted. But then, typically what I'll do is, like, it's rare that I go to the bathroom. What I'll typically do is, you know, you start boarding 30 minutes before your flight or whatever. So 35 minutes before, I'll pack up, and then I'll take all my stuff and go pee. That way I'm coming back, like, right as it's time to, like, board.
Right.
But if for some reason I need to pee with, like, a half hour more to go before boarding, then it's, like, then that's when the gamble takes place.
I think I start to get, like, nervous pees before I get on.
That's me. I pee every 15 minutes before a plane. I mean, I already pee a lot, but, like, before a plane, you're like, well, what if this is my last chance? What if this is my last chance? And you do it as if there's not a bathroom on the plane, but I haven't used a plane bathroom since I was, like, 10.
They're actually a really pleasant experience. They're, like, the A-plus of porta-potties.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. I think the problem, too, is, though, like, I'll get, like, I feel like even though they can't, because, like, the whole plane is droning with loud noise, you still feel like everybody can hear you. So, like, you get stage fright to, like, pee, or, like, you definitely, I wouldn't want to have to take a shit on a plane because the air is recycled and there's nowhere for your shit smell to go.
I actually really enjoy it because if you go into the bathroom on a plane, they generally, if it's a long flight, they'll have, like, higher quality soaps. So I've gotten, like, lavender and lemongrass hand soap before. Also, they put in individual PA systems just for the bathroom so that you can actually
hear the
announcements so much more clearly than you could if you were sitting out at your seat.
Brandon's like, I feel so much more informed.
And it feels like they're speaking to you directly, which I think is a nice experience. You know, I think the captain is talking to me while I poop. You know, it's a great experience, honestly. It's nice to have communication while I'm, you know, excreting out my waste.
So you're not gonna walk out into a situation and just be surprised by it.
Yeah,
certainly.
You're like you walk out and you're like, I know there could be turbulence, god damn it.
Right. And everyone else is like, what'd he say? I couldn't hear it over that fucking crying baby. I never had that problem.
You walk out the door like you're blind with both hands out ready to grab stuff. I heard a captain.
You know what's funny is I meant to mention this back when we were talking about the stalls in the bathroom, but have either of you guys ever had to change at an airport stall?
Change? Why? Did you have an incident?
Is this like
I've been like ready to go home and been in like work clothes, and like it was like a long flight, and so I wanted to be like, you know, in like shorts
because
it was
summer. Burger King, man.
Yeah.
Well, no, this was like back when I was wearing like khakis and a tie, like that kind of stuff.
Burger King.
But I mean, I've also done it actually whenever we go to that beach, Brandon, out at Coney Island. The point is, have you ever had to change in a stall where the floor is disgusting? And so what you end up doing is like taking your pants off and then your shoes off, and then you step back down on top of your shoes so that your socks aren't on the floor.
Definitely.
And then you have to like, you're like trying to hang your shit, but at Coney Island, there aren't any hooks on the fucking doors. So you're like holding up. At what you do at Coney Island is like, you don't want to ride out in your swimsuit on the subway. Like, have the netting or the pant like squeezing your balls. Like, a swimsuit pant is shorter than like acceptable public shorts. So like, I'm standing there butt naked with socks still on, standing on my own gym shoes.
Is that in case
holding,
you step out of your
holding
shoe?
My swimsuit in one hand and my pants in the other hand, and then like I'll try to work it, like maybe put my pants in my teeth, and then like you try to put on your swimsuit, but one leg at a time so you can step back down onto your shoes. And then you put the other one on. And then that one, you don't want to step back on your shoes again. You might as well make it one movement. So then you step down and like you're standing on one foot on your other shoe while you pick up the other shoe to put it on your foot. Then that shoe's safe. You got one good foot. And then you can lift up the other one and put your other shoe on. Take the pants out of your mouth. But like, it's awful. It's like you're, it's like the real life version of the lava game. But you're going to step on a homeless person's poop.
That is male yoga.
Yeah, and sometimes the doors don't have locks, so you also have to keep balance while pushing the door back to stay shut while you're naked. Like, that's my Coney Island changing experience.
All right, so how many times then has it not worked? You stepped, you missed your shoe, you fell out of your shoe, and you just said, "Fuck."
Just got on the floor. If you did it at that bat, no, I would never say "fuck" at Coney Island. If not, just because the floor is soaking wet and you have a wet sock.
Yeah. Even with socks on, though? I mean, yeah.
No, wet socks. That's the worst that could happen.
But like an airport or something like that.
At an airport, I've said fuck, but I still wouldn't give up. I'd step back up onto my shoe.
I feel like I'm 7 out of 10 falling out of my shoe.
At an airport, I fall out more often, I think just because the risk is lower. At Coney Island, like, it's do or die.
Very calculated.
Yeah, yeah, you can't
fuck up. Sheldon Cooper in there.
You just can't. You cannot fuck up there.
Before we dive into anything too deep, should we introduce how we know Brandon? Or
care?
We're all college friends. I don't know if have we ever said how we know each other.
Me and you did.
Yeah, well, Brandon's a part of that same equation. If you're a listener,
done.
Brandon's the third portion of that exact same formula.
I'm the third wheel of
no,
the group.
No.
The third wheel. No. So
you Matt, are the you two are front both tire of the tricycle. You steer the ship.
I'm still the smaller wheel of the three wheels.
Why you gotta make it negative?
Analogy.
Maybe just because you're the shortest one.
I'm also
all right. So to satisfy both of you, you're the small dick to our big balls.
Oh, that's tough, Brandon. Is that good or bad? You do have a dick picture in your room.
I do not.
You know, like those people where you either got one or the other.
Paid a lot of money for that, so I resent your calling it a dick picture.
That's what Andy called it. Just to be clear.
It's very Basquiat-esque for our highbrow listeners. I like it.
Did you say Moscow?
Basquiat?
Like Russia?
Like the 80s grunge New York City painter?
Oh, got nothing.
Kurt Cobain?
He's got a new album coming out. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
He does.
Kurt Cobain has an album coming out?
Yeah.
How's that work?
Same as anything else. What do y'all think about that? I think it's
posthumous albums.
Yeah, it's like just leave them alone.
Has one ever been very good?
Probably a Michael Jackson one would have been good. Well, but it's not going to be new content.
Yeah, no, that album was pretty good. I'm sure Tupac's had some good ones. Actually, the song had been out, but the remix of that Elvis song, a little less conversation, a little more action, whatever. Like that song ended up being pretty good. That was a good posthumous song. But I think it's like sort of the definition of like exploitation. Like you're taking something that they never thought was good enough to release. Like I'm sure there's exceptions. Like they went and recorded a studio and died, or an album and died before it could be released. But otherwise you're like digging into their B-sides of content they never thought was good enough to be released.
Right.
And releasing it anyway.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Not to take this in a more lame or highbrow direction, but Harper Lee, that new
book
got coming out, I feel the same way about it. It was like her B version of the same novel, just set in a futuristic setting.
And she never wanted to do it.
She never wanted to do it.
And now she's not lucid.
Exactly. So her, I think it's her sister or someone, a close family member or friend has taking advantage of that situation, I feel.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. So I hope that's not the case with this new Kurt Cobain album, but it also coincides with that documentary release of Kurt Cobain's, that montage of Heck that just came
which
out.
Which I haven't seen that, but I want to. But you know what? I read, this was the pinnacle, in my opinion, of sort of this kind of thing being really negative. But when I was in high school, I read, I don't know if you guys ever remember seeing this, but they released literal photocopied pages of his journals. It was like a red book, like a red hard copy book, and they photocopied pages out of his journal and just released it. Like, it's not even printed up. It's like his handwriting, his drawings, his notes, coffee stained. Courtney Love released this stuff, and it's like that is stuff that has to be stuff he never intended to be seen by everybody. Like, there is crazy dark stuff in there. Like, yeah, it offered you some cool insight to him. Like, I obviously wasn't above buying it. Like, I was very interested in it. But, like, that doesn't mean I don't think it was wrong. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, well, if you were put in that same situation, would you want people reading your stuff posthumously?
Right. I mean, the answer is no, I think.
Is that how you say that? I was thinking that earlier. Then I started thinking, no, I'm confused with posture.
Nope, that's how you say it.
Posthumously. Posthumous. Post. Yep.
I've watched enough Medal of Honor to know that's how you say that. Any military movie, you'll get a good dose of posthumous.
True. Nice. Well, would you want to, like, I know, Matt, you probably like that music more than either of us, but I'd say we all liked it a lot. But Do either of y'all care to listen to more Nirvana?
Here's the truth. I don't like them that much. No. I'm not a big Nirvana fan. I think, not because, like, any group's better than another, but, like, they're, like, a little dark for me. And I think knowing, like, where it took him, like, it feels more sinister than I think it would otherwise, you know? It's, like, one thing for a band to sing about dark things, but, like, when you hear his stuff, you're like, clearly it was very...
Right, real. It's, like, after the fact, you know exactly what he's writing about.
So I think that's why I've never connected with it. I mean, like, full disclosure, I'm a humongous Pearl Jam fan, and they were, like, big rivals, so that's probably another reason I don't like them as much, but, like, I would select Pearl Jam over Nirvana. But, like, they were, like, a happier version, you know? They have the similar, like, growly sound, but, like, Pearl Jam's almost more, like, classic rocky than grunge.
Right, yeah. Well, I interrupted you. What direction were you going to go?
Who, me or B?
You.
Oh, I was just now opening the notepad.
Would you ever allow yourself to come to the point where you see your vehicle as simply what takes you from A to B?
Be specific about what car you're thinking about buying.
Okay, so I'm not thinking about buying it. I just happen to drive by it and it fits the mold. But we drove past a Fiat dealership downtown the other day. And they're all over the place because it's relatively new, at least in America, I think. Like, I hadn't heard of it outside of Gran Turismo.
Someone bought them, like a major company bought Fiat. That's why.
Yeah, they've been producing cars for American drivers for a couple years now, I know.
Yeah,
I want to say Chrysler bought them, but hold on. Let me look into that while you guys are talking.
So what's the...
Would you ever allow yourself to buy something that you have no interest in only for the fact that it would be cheap and you'd save on gas? Like,
yes.
I have no interest in a car like that. But I also, I'm not trying to go through a $60 of gas a week.
Well, I think there's a lot of self-expression that you could be giving out on a Fiat. I don't think they're quite a Toyota Camry, but...
Well, see, a Camry is definitely a step.
It's a statement still. I think they're still in that age in America where owning a Fiat is saying something like, you know, whether you have higher taste or you are more economically minded or, you know, there's a lot of things you could pull out of owning a Fiat. Whereas, like, if you were to buy an 87, you know, Ford Camry or, I'm sorry, not
a Ford Camry,
Toyota Camry. This is how much I know about cars.
But hang on. So what are you, separating the statement from the utility?
I'm saying that should you buy a Fiat as of 2015, you're still making a choice that could also have statement value. There's value added by buying a Fiat rather than another very plain economical car.
Well, let me ask him this, though, because I was under the impression you don't like them. Like, I think they're stupid looking.
No, I don't like it, but I think if I were to go look at them, I think I could live with, like, a solid black one that's just, like, a zipped-up little car. Once I get inside, it's probably going to be nicely decorated on the inside.
Yeah.
I'm going to forget what it looks like, and I'm going to save a lot of money. In buying it, also, I'm going to save a lot of money.
So here's what I proposed, Brandon, and this is where I stand. I think I agree with what Brandon said, in that it's a statement car, and I think that's the problem with it, is, like, I would never want to spend that much money on something that makes a statement that I don't want to make, no matter how economic it is. Like, sends off, like, a vibe I wouldn't want to send off, where I could spend the same amount of money and get a car that doesn't make a statement at all, which is what I'd prefer to do for that price point. Like, I told Andy that I would prefer to just buy, like, a Hyundai or a Kia, because, like, they're cheap, they don't make a statement, and you get a 10-year warranty. Like, I'm not trying to spend that on a car that's, like, considered, like, nicer or higher end, because then I will still have spent $15,000 that on a car that, yes, 50% of people might like, but 50% of people might really dislike, and I fall in at 50%. If I liked it, I'd buy it, but it's just so much money to spend on, like, I think what it is, like, a very specific looking kind of car. Like, it's not generic. Like, I'd rather buy a Camry, or I mean that's higher than a Fiat, but like rather buy a Kia or a Hyundai. Like I'd rather buy those.
Right.
Just because like you can get a nice looking Hyundai or Kia, you get a 10-year warranty, so nothing's gonna happen to it.
Well, see, and you mentioned that. Does Fiat? Are you assuming that they also wouldn't have a nice warranty? Or
I don't know. They don't. I mean, they don't promote it, but like I just know like Kia and Hyundai, like that's their thing. Like especially Kia, like the 10-year warranty. Like, and I know people have them, and they're not bad cars.
Yeah. And I wonder also if because Fiat is new to me that I would come near buying something like that, because I already have my impressions made from the other two because of how they were made when they first came out. Like my first recollection of Kia is when they first came out and you could buy two cars for the price of one.
Uh-huh.
Like, do y'all remember that? Brandon, that might have been before you.
I don't remember that ad campaign specifically, but...
Yeah, buy two cars for the price of one.
I mean, cheap cars, I mean, that'll get people's attention. Like, you're definitely going after a certain demographic. To me, though, like, and I was trying to be specific about this, I don't want to say, like, oh, I don't want a Kia. They're stupid looking. Like, I'm not a car snob. And that was what was going to lead to another one of our conversations. Like, I drove a Ford Taurus without heat or air conditioning, where I'd taken people to movie theaters, where I had to scrape ice off the inside of my windshield because like my breath had frozen to the glass. You had to hold the back door shut with your hands sometimes because the locks would freeze open. Like, I loved my 01 Taurus. I didn't care. Like, getting from A to B is all I care about. So I guess like economically, whatever you want to do is the most important. But like I've always even told Kelly, if I had enough money, you know, you always think of like somebody who wins the lottery. So what do? They buy a car. Like, that is not my first thought. Like, I don't care at all. I don't like, cars don't impress me. Like, I'm never like, ooh, awesome. Like Lamborghini. Like, I don't care. I would never buy that shit. Like, they're not practical. They're not like, where are you racing it? You know what I mean? Like, what are you doing with that? So like, to me, I'd rather buy like a $500,000 watch. Like, if I was, I'm saying like rich, like cars aren't what I think about first. Plus, when you're in like a conference room, if it's like a status symbol, people can't see your fucking car. You know what I mean? Like, they don't, like, why not have something that's on your body all the time?
Sure.
It's funny you mentioned Lamborghini, because I actually was driving next to one on the way to work yesterday morning.
Really?
And I used to love Lamborghinis.
They were my favorite too. I did Diablo on my wall.
I had a Diablo model and I had a Countach model. But my first thought when I saw this one was, if I rear end this, would my truck drive up onto it, or would it crash into it? And I actually, like, I thought about that for about 10 seconds.
I don't know, but you could total it, too, because the engine's in the back.
Well, that'd be trouble.
And talk about,
same thought from
talk
the
about
front.
Your insurance fucking you over.
If it rear-ended me, would I then back up on top of it?
Well, the physics of Fast and Furious suggests that you go flying over top of it. So that probably means you would just crash into it.
Verino, we thought it was funny, though, that you could also contribute to that same comment that Matt just made, because I remember the car you drove was full of personality as well.
Yeah, my Suzuki Firenza. Yeah, that was, what, like a $12,000, $13,000 car that my parents bought that once I was out of high school, they basically were like, gave it to me to use in college because they didn't really want it anymore. It was already to the point where it was decrepit, you know, like
had the broken hubcap
because it was so cheap. Had the broken hubcap, like little things, very cosmetic, but like.
But they add up.
To show how little I actually ended up caring about a car and its ability to exercise self-expression, you know, like I'm not the kind of guy that wears my car as a vehicle for self-expression. If I want to use that term, like,
right.
I'm also the type of guy that wears the same 7 shirts to work each week.
That's me. Right? Yeah.
Like, I don't want to put thought into those types of things. I would rather have self-expression come out in my work or in like my home environment or something else other than, you know, what is visible to the general public. I'd rather focus all my energy into like what people who know me are going to be interested in. And so like when it comes to a vehicle, unless I was in a position to get a really great deal for like a vintage Volkswagen or something, I don't think
that's your example.
Yeah, would love that. I don't think that I would ever be interested in anything that gets less than 40 miles to the gallon. Like, you know, that's just how I think about transportation.
Right.
You know,
Like, I am also not the type of guy that cares about what subway line I live off of, right? Like, it's the same idea in New York City where, you know, you want to live like a nicer line. You don't want to live on the G train. You don't want to live off the J or the Z.
You know, not just neighborhood, you know?
Yeah, if not just the neighborhood in general. Like, I
that makes sense. I've
been totally accepting of living in with, you know, my girlfriend in the past, living in Bed-Stuy and Bushwick and Washington Heights. Like, those aren't things that I care about too much. That's all practicalities.
Right.
It's like, once you get there and once you're like in an environment where you are around other people that you know, that's where my focus tends to go. So when it comes to your question, whether people should care about their car as much as they do, probably not, because most of the time it's going to blend in anyways. What, like, most cars are all white, red, black, gray,
right, neutral
colors. Like, they're going to blend in. No one's going to...
And unless you hit like a certain class of car, like, it's going to really blend in.
Right.
You know?
You have to be in the Lamborghini, Porsche, you know, high class BMW level cars for to really make a statement these days.
I agree. Even in New York, sometimes Maseratis sneak up on you. Like, you don't realize what it is until you're like,
there's a
up
lot of
on
those
it
down here.
Yeah. So I find
Brandon, wasn't it one of the first times we actually did we all meet in the winter?
Or no, we all met at the on like the last week of school at the Colonel Awards or whatever. Colonel Reunion.
Right, I seen,
you made the adjustment getting out the back of Melissa's car.
Yeah, I had to proportionalize, is that what I said?
Yeah, proportionalize, that's it.
I thought I remembered like one of the first times that Brandon, we ever did anything. Like, I remember driving you back to your dorm or picking you up from your dorm, one, because your car was actually frozen shut. Like, was that a thing, or did I just make that up? I thought I
remember sure
that.
It was a thing.
My car froze shut.
Well, you didn't live in the dorm, though. Like, I remember dropping him off and that being an issue, because I think you called me back shortly after, and I came back to get you.
Oh.
But I would have thought that would have been earlier on and not whenever we were really in the group.
I don't know, but I do know – I want to respond to something Brandon said, because I'm like Brandon definitely much more so. Like I care about like what I have at home as well. Like, I don't care about how I'm dressed. I don't care about my car and stuff. I don't know what you would say, Andy, but I would argue that you're the opposite. I'm not saying you care about what people think, but like, you're much more into fashion or like what you're wearing or like what it means or like if it's in GQ and like that seems like more of your style. No pun intended.
Well, it's just like Brandon saying that vehicle for self-expression. Right?
Yeah, yeah. We're all about the puns.
I caught that. I don't know. I mean, like, definitely clothes. I like to dress a certain way, but that's not necessarily for anyone else's benefit. I like the way that it makes me feel about myself walking into the day. Like, I went and got 3 shirts over the weekend that'll probably last me for 4 months, but the fact that they fit
the way
they do.
Why would they only last you that long?
No. I mean, as far as they'll hold me over for needing new clothes. Like, I don't buy new clothes very often.
Me either. That's why I figured, like, I was just going to actually say, like, I almost never shop for new clothes. Like, I have to force myself.
Yeah. But here lately, I finally settled in, started buying clothes that are the size I am right now and not what size I want to be or what size I think I may be. But, like, having your pants fit the way they're supposed to fit, having your shirt fit the way it's supposed to fit, it makes your day better, like, from the get-go.
Yeah.
Because I go back to a pair of pants I was wearing at the old job that I got just because I had to have something nice to wear when I got here and I didn't have enough money to buy something nice. And I feel like – I just feel sloppy. Like, I feel like that's going to come out in what I'm working on because it's just my attitude for that day.
Yeah.
So, like, for that regard, I mean, yeah, I like the idea of looking nice. I like that, especially with work, because they always say, you know, like, dress for the job you want, not the job you have. Like, right now, we don't have a dress code, and there's some people who will wear flip-flops to work, but that doesn't interest me. I'd rather wear a 3-piece suit to work every day.
Right. Oh, God, not me. I'd rather be comfortable. I'm not saying I want to wear flip-flops, but I would not like to have to wear a suit every day. Just, like, the maintenance of that. Like, I like wearing jeans and a button-down every day.
Right. But as far as, like, you go ahead, Brandon.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think in like a corporate environment in which we work, Matt, like our ability to wear on the scale of casual to like formal work attire, it very much makes a statement on where we think of ourselves in line with our colleagues. Like at a place that's smaller, you can get away with wearing whatever you want because everyone is on the same level and no one cares that much. But say I start wearing a three-piece suit to work every day, they're going to think of me differently, or they're going to have different expectations of me because of that. And that's not a bad thing, but it's like who you align with in the corporate world, you know, whereas I would never say that I would feel comfortable as like a CEO, but those are the types of people, and the SVPs are the ones who are coming to work. And
what's that idea, like dress for the job you want? You know, they always say that's like what you're supposed to do.
That's very like, that's also very geographic, I think. Like, because like I also here, it's their corporate office. It's actually their home office. The CEO of the company, which is, I mean, it's, I don't know where it is relative to y'all. I know y'all have very much 100 times over name recognition, but as far as like employees, stuff like that, I don't know where it is, but the CEO walked past me yesterday wearing like a jeans and a short sleeve button up. But it's also the environment, like the product that it sells.
Yeah, like ours would never media. Ever be in anything but a suit.
Well, ours is media too, but still like our focus.
Right.
Not our medium, but our focus is different.
Right. I mean I get the need to be dressed well. It's just like I'm not as comfortable in that. But
and then also Florida, you're just not gonna wear a 3-piece suit.
Right.
Speaking of being the size you wanted, you mentioned something to me like a week or so ago. Were you saying you wanted to start running again?
Yeah.
You say yeah, but what was the hesitation there?
I don't really
want to
run.
But so you don't want to, you want to run, but you don't want to run.
I want to be in shape to do intramural stuff. I want to get on a soccer team real bad.
Right. And so that was what we were going to start talking about is like, you said you just hate it, period, flat out, right? Like, there's never been a time you've liked running?
Never.
Not once?
Never.
So what I said, Brandon, was there are definitely times I hate it. But, like, there's that time where, like, you've eaten just the right amount, gotten just the right amount of sleep, it's the perfect temperature, like, you're on the river, the wind's hitting you, and, like, you just, like, you don't care. You're at 3 miles, you don't want to stop. You're just like, yeah, this feels awesome. Like, I love those times. Like, I don't know if it's the runner's high or, like, whatever it is. But Brandon, you used to actually do it. I mean, do you like it? Or even when you did it, you didn't like it.
No, I think I did. When I was running cross country and running like 5, 6, 7 miles at a time, it was it became a point where I think any runner will tell you that the first couple miles are always the worst. And then after that, you kind of get loosened up and your second wind is kicked in and it's kind of just going through the motions of running. Right. But yeah, I did like it, in fact. And I think this goes back to something else where it's more of a behavioral thing. Like I am not the type of guy that listens to music or podcasts or anything outside of running because I enjoy the experience of running and like taking in my environment, but also using that time to think about my days ahead or, you know, really work through a problem that I've been having or something like that. Like that is a time for me to have like free time to handle and digest all of that information.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was like beneficial to me. Absolutely. Going through like high school and graduation and all that stuff. When I was running all the time, that was like a big help. I could honestly use that time now. Now that I've become an adult and I'm out of like the kernel grind.
Right.
But I don't know. I feel like the first month you start running again, you need to just accept that it's not going to be as fun as it will be and kind of power through.
So I'm the exact opposite of you as far as like media. Like I need something, if not just to pass the time, because I don't want to hear my own self struggling for oxygen Like, I don't want to hear my breath. Because then it's like, oh, God, I can hear myself like, when my music's turned up, it's like, oh, man, I'm not even struggling, you know, because you can't hear yourself. So, like, I don't even like listening to podcasts because I can hear myself. Like, plus, like, something about music, like, I listen to, like, hard rock and stuff. Like, it actually, like, pumps me into going. You know, like, there's definitely a difference. Like, I run at different speeds. If different songs come on, like, I can feel it. So I could never just run without, like, anything on. And I need to have, like, Nike Plus running because I want to know how fast. Like, that's what makes it interesting to me is, like, record it, like, have it documented. Like, that app makes me more inclined to run because it's, like, I want to go further than last time or I don't want to drop blown, like, a nine-minute mile. Like, it pushes me. You know what I mean? So, like, I like having that app going because otherwise, like, I feel like if it was just me and no device, like, I'm not good enough at pacing myself. I'm not good enough. Like, I wouldn't be as motivated. But instead I have this thing that's like, you know, you're running at like an 850 mile. I'd be like, fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, and then you want to go faster. Like you want to, you know, be like, okay, well, I went this far last time. It measures out like how far you've gone and like run the furthest or like try to set some record that day. Like it sort of helps push me to that. Like I could not just go out with just like a shorts and a t-shirt on. Like I got to have my phone, got to have music, got to have something like counting how far I'm going. Like document that I ran somewhere.
Yeah.
Would you ever run for the purpose of drawing something on your map that's through your phone?
I mean, not for the purpose, but I think that's funny when people do that. But you realize how far you have to go to write something? Like, that's a thing for me. It's like, that's a long way you're talking about if you're going to, like, distinguish enough, like, distance to, like, make clear letters and then, like, plot your route. Like, I'm not trying to do all that. That's so much work.
That's actually a great idea, Andy.
That's not my idea.
I think it's really funny.
I think that there's a girl or something who – I got to make sure I'm getting this right because I'm mixing up two things. Kelly follows this Instagram account where, like, people post pictures of finding, like, penises in everyday objects. And I believe there's a girl who either just put it on there or a girl who literally runs in the shape of a dick every time she runs.
That's her. You're kind of mixing it because – she's got a lot of those, but then she's also done some other just
unexpected. So she runs, but she does dicks.
Yeah, I mean, she's done some other things that required a lot of thought that are nowhere near that that value.
That value.
Yeah.
That's a good word choice.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't go out with that goal in mind, though, for sure. I don't care about that.
Brandon.
Yes.
Matt. Before we had gotten started today, Matt had told me that you were going to check out an apartment.
This got canceled. I told you that. But yes, I told you.
It got canceled. Right. So it got me thinking because hearing that in general, I had my own thoughts come to mind.
You got to be clear about what you're saying because it sounds like Brandon's apartment shopping and that's not your problem.
No. He's not apartment shopping. Okay. You can cut this if you need to, but you were going to check out the new apartment of your ex-girlfriend. So that idea just immediately sparked something in my mind, and I'm not asking for this to go into personal experience, but what kind of, I guess it's two things. What kind of relationship, how would a relationship have to end in order for you to be friends after, and would it at all depend on whether or not you were friends beforehand? Or does that affect it at all? Like, what do you think is required of the ending and the pre-relationship to allow for friends after the relationship?
What a concisely asked question.
That is a really good question, Andy.
I was trying real hard.
Yeah, I love that. I'm a big fan of that question. You know what? I think that's a good question. My preliminary answer with given no prior warning to what this question was going to be, I would say there has to be like a critical mass of common interests in order to hold it together. I think that's what, in my experience, has been the key to holding on to friendships after relationships, not this one in particular, but in general. So especially when you share particular interests with that person who it may not be reflected with your general friend pool at that point. Like,
they offer something unique.
Yeah, like I enjoy looking at like Native American art, which is ridiculous of me, but it's something that she also enjoyed.
So, yeah, like Brandon can't talk to us about art. She fills a void that we can't fill.
Exactly. True. So I almost feel compelled to speak with her about that.
Hold on, let me ask you this. Did you like that before you met her?
I did not. See, these are things, and this goes back to another like key that I think like when it comes back to building a relationship with someone, whether that's like somebody new, like in like a, just a friend in general, or it could be a person you think you're going to like have a real serious relationship with for your future. I think it's so key to like find someone who knows and is an expert in something that you know little in. Right. Like Brittany, in this case, that was her name. She was someone who had a lot of expertise in the art field, and that was something I knew very little about. And in general, I still know very little about art, but there were certain areas in which I kind of clung to more than others. Right. And we generally like learned about those things together in that experience. You know, this could be, you could relate this to a sports team. Like Andy, you live in Orlando, you know, you live and understand a sports team there together. And like, you learn those people. And like, if you wanted to talk about the Magic with someone, it would probably be somebody who, you know, from Orlando over me. And you almost feel compelled to talk to them about it over anyone else because you're put in that position. So that's what our friendship has kind of been sprouted from, is like all this like common interests that we would want to explore, and then we can't with others. Not saying that's a bad thing. I think that's like a good way to keep some kind of civil relationship together. I don't know. So I think of it as a huge positive.
Do you think it matters whether or not you're friends beforehand? Change the likelihood of it working out? Because also factor in how successful this is. Because, I mean, there's shows and movies all the time about it where it does work, it doesn't work.
You know what's weird is I was thinking about that question as you asked it, and like about being friends with someone first. And I don't know that I've ever had that. I don't know if I ever dated somebody I was friends with like for like a good amount of time first. You know what I mean? Like, I've had people who you're friends with first. Obviously, you don't want to start dating like necessarily like immediately. But like I'm saying, like a person who you've known for more than 6 months or a year, and then to start dating them, like. And not to mention like the success of afterwards. My gut would be that would almost make it harder. But
well, if you go by the numbers, then you as a case study there, would you say that you've successfully done this?
Had friends afterwards?
Been friends.
I've only failed to be friends with somebody afterwards once, and that's because I was in a situation like Brandon, and every time I kept hanging out with this person afterwards, we kept getting back together, and I was finally like, I can't do this anymore. Right. Like, so I don't want to get back together.
So you've got predominantly strong evidence to back it doesn't matter if you were friends before.
Right. Well, and actually, that was somebody who I was friends with first. Not for a long time, but I was friends with first. And I told Brandon, like, there are still times I wish, like, something will happen. I'll be like, oh, like, I wish I could, like send her a tweet or text her about, because, like, this funny thing happened that, like, you know, we used to talk about. But, like, generally speaking, I'd also say, like, I didn't have that much in common with this person. Like, she was sort of like like more preppy than I was, much like a private school type of person. Like our personalities on paper, if you put them down, you wouldn't have expected. Like I got along with her pretty well for a while, and then I didn't.
What word do you use to sum up your relationship?
No. But I'm saying like
got along.
She was a good person. It's like one of those things where it was like it was incompatible. What happened is like every time I'd keep hanging out with her, it was like it was the easy or like comfortable thing to do. It's like I finally made a decision of like. Just gotta cut ties. Like I have to just like, and I didn't think permanently at the time. I was just like for a few months until like it won't happen anymore, you know. Right. So, and then it just so happened it was like there wasn't really a reason to. Like I never had a reason to reach back out or you know what I mean. Like,
do you think that a certain kind of breakup allows a friendship to be more likely? Like, do you need it to be a certain kind of breakup?
I don't know what you mean by kind of breakup, because I've never had a bad breakup. I've never had a nasty breakup. Never had, like, somebody, like, throwing a shoe at my head. You know what I mean? Like, it was generally, like, almost, in fact, every breakup I've been a part of was sort of like, do you want to, like, I don't want to, do you want, you know what I mean? Like, that's sort of what I've been at, and that's the best kind of breakup. I think that's the one that you are most likely to be able to be friends, where you're like, it isn't really working for me. Is it working for you? And the other person's like, yeah, I'm not really feeling it either. Because then you're both like, yeah, this is common. Let's be friends. Like, high five. And then that's it. I think that's the best kind.
Right. Yeah. So my question to rephrase, I guess, I mean, I think you answered it anyways, would be, do you have to have gone through a certain kind of breakup to switch off relationship mode and go into friend mode without the pitfalls? Like,
what is does the pitfall? A certain is the pitfall fighting or slipping back in? Okay.
No, slipping back in. So, like, do you have to have had a nasty breakup so that you're kind of just... you can't have a nasty breakup and then, like, you're just going to be mad every time
you see him. No, that's exactly right. I think nasty is the safest for making sure you don't go back in, because then the other party is going to be like, fuck you. You know what I'm saying?
Right, but
like,
then if you have a super cordial breakup, then things are kind of left on shaky enough ground moving forward. Like, we don't really dislike each other. There's not really that much changed. So then does that make it even riskier?
Yeah, I mean, risky as far as falling back in. But, like, if you talk about a cordial breakup where it wasn't necessarily, like, both parties agreed and then one party realizes they, like, made a mistake or something, there are times falling back in isn't the worst thing, you know? Like, sometimes shit happens.
Right. But in terms of a breakup to end the relationship...
Meaning
that the goal is
the most dangerous pitfall of a breakup to end a relationship, and Brandon, I swear to God, it's not supposed to be like this. This would be my answer no matter what. I think is where one party blindsides another person or has like a selfish reason. Like if the other person did not see it coming at all. So you leave, and this is, I swear to God, this is supposed to parallel Brandon. I'm saying like where one party one party would still have their interest because they didn't, there was nothing wrong in their opinion. You know what I mean? And then the other party like makes a decision where their decision was right. Like they had a reason they wanted to do it and it made sense. But at the time that they made the decision, they didn't weigh like, okay, for me to be able to do XYZ, like whether it's like, I want to date other people, or I want more time with my friends, or I want to move. Like, whatever it is, they didn't think about the consequence, like the fallout. Like, but that means I lose person X, who still has an interest. That, I think, is the most dangerous one. Because one party is still interested, and the other party might be off doing something like, they might have moved, they might be doing something with friends, but then they're like, oh, but I miss this, and party X is still waiting to receive it. This is party X, my right hand. I think that that's the most dangerous, but that can also fall into the scorned or angry person, because if somebody gets blindsided, they might be like, well, fuck you, bitch. You know what I mean? Like, so that could also fall in the, like, no way, Jose kind of thing. So I don't know. I don't know if there's on paper, like, the most dangerous breakup. Right. I think anytime you're still in contact, it's a possibility. You know what I mean?
All right, so
because if it's a pitfall to still hook up at some point, you could argue people who are like, "Oh, this isn't really working," the one that I said is the best one, they still might fuck.
Brandon, give me three short steps for successfully navigating a friendship after the relationship. Simple steps.
This is not going to be from experience because I'm still
preliminary
stages of my own situation.
No, this is just in your mind how it works best.
Three successful steps. So the first step would be a time gap in between breakup and friendship rekindle.
Do you think you've achieved step one?
What?
Do you think you've achieved step one?
Yes, I agree. I think so.
Okay, go ahead.
So the first step would be give it time. Relax. Time kind of heals all that incredible, like, high passion emotions that you may be feeling, whether that's anger or sadness or whatever. Give it time, let it settle down, and get yourself to a position in which you are happy with your life. And in fact, you're content with it to a point where that person isn't necessary to your happiness. That's the second step. Third step would be
have you achieved step two?
Yes, I would say so. Yeah.
You say so I assume that was a harder one to achieve.
Well, it's just kind of like, I think that's where I am presently.
Yeah.
I think it's like, I have
like a mood thing.
Well, like you're readapting a lifestyle at that point.
Sure. Well, in my case, it was a brand new move into a new apartment. And so there's a lot of things, a lot of baggage that comes with that, like, making my apartment feel like home and feeling like I've reentered the dating scene successfully and all of these things. There's a lot of steps for that to accomplish for me. But once you've gotten to a point where you can, you know, feel like you are an independent person and whole by yourself, then I think you're in a good position to slowly reintroduce that friendship. So the third step for me would be slow conversation building elements, you know, talking about something that you guys care about in particular, but, you know, maybe through texting, maybe through email, whatever you feel comfortable with. If you think that you can do that successfully, then I think there's a possibility for a friendship to bloom again. Otherwise, I think you tread a dangerous path if you skip any of those three things. If you rush back into a friendship, I think you're more likely to either slip into a, let's say, fuck buddy situation.
Right.
Or if you don't give yourself enough time to heal, then you're going to like damage yourself again if you try to become friends with that person. And you're going to feel like dependent upon that friendship to feel like yourself. And if that person doesn't really want to reciprocate that, you put yourself in a very dangerous situation. And then the third one, obviously, you just need to let yourself relax and get over the situation. Like you need just to get to a point where you're not constantly thinking about whatever the breakup or situation that ended the relationship isn't like in the back of your head every time you think about that person.
Right.
So you like, that's probably the biggest consequences. One.
Yep.
Like what you do, how does that affect you? Not what is what you're going to do going to affect what the other person thinks. So, Matt, same question, but give me Twitter version.
The Twitter version?
Yeah. I just want the steps.
I think, so this is to being able to approach the person as a friend, like what needs to happen.
Is that a question or is that an answer?
I'm asking if that's what you're looking for.
No, just the three steps to successfully navigate friendship after relationship.
I think that the Twitter version of that is simply, I think Brandon's comment on time is the most important one. Like, there's no question about that one.
So what is, because you asked him if he had made it far enough, what do you think the time is? Because you got to get far enough that you're not still thinking about missing the person.
I got to be honest, I'd say maybe I would argue like a little bit longer, but like it's different for everything. Like maybe 3+ months, 4, 5, a half a year.
Yeah, I think it depends on the breakup.
Yeah, know? Just it really
if it's
just
a catastrophic
depends.
Breakup, then you're going to need longer to deal with that.
Well, so yeah, I should say that. I don't think it's possible with every breakup, too. I should be really careful about saying, like, I'm not saying this is the foolproof plan for every situation.
Yeah, no,
saying,
yeah, we're going to come back to that.
If it's possible, this is what I think. So then, time. Secondly, I think you have to, this is the most important one, maybe even more so than time. Whether it's easy or not, time should dictate this part. But you need to make it a situation where you are not sexually attracted to them anymore. And there's a lot of ways to do that. A new person could be in the scene. No, there is. I mean, if you're going to be friends. Because if you're sexually attracted to somebody who you have a bond with, then it's always going to be a problem and you can't just be friends.
Okay.
Because then we enter the real sticky situation of like, can guys and girls just be friends?
Right. Yeah.
So like, that's a different conversation. I think yes, but I'm saying like there are people who argue otherwise. But anyways, so what I was going to say is there can't be a sexual attraction with that person, and if there is, you shouldn't be friends because there's still a problem. Like, you've already dated, so you know that there's the compatibility for that. You're still sexually attracted, so you want to have sex with them, so that's a problem. And, like, I'm not saying you need to think they're ugly. Like, the answer is, like, get them real fat. But, like, I am saying, like, you just need to be a place where mentally you're not, like, if I hang out with them, this could be a problem. You know what I mean? Or, like, I'm going to think about this. I'm not saying it's more crass way of like saying what Brandon did when he said like you just need to be in the right headspace of not thinking about the relationship, because I mean specifically sexually attracted to them, because that can create a problem. Like one night where both of you have like one too many drinks, you set the entire thing back to ground zero and you implode it all. Like that's what I mean. So like if you're at that point where that could still happen, you need to have a couple bourbons and think about it and like and like look at her text and like and be like, am I gonna do something stupid? You know what I mean? Like, or am I not? And like once you've hit that point, then it's like, okay, now I can be friends. You proceed. And I think the final step is just like, it's not so much a step on knowing when it's time to be friends, so much as like how to navigate it. And that's just like that from there on out, every decision you make needs to be like with the idea that you are friends and not exes in mind. So like you can do things for them, but you don't want to do things that like callbacks to like relationshipy type things. You don't want to like act like you're in a relationship. Like from then on, the precedent you need to set, you can't act the same as you were when you're dating, because then you can fall back into it. I think it's like the foundation needs to change. So like you, I'm not saying you need to like not touch them and you're like high five, but it's like, you know, the type of presents you get them or the kinds of things you say to them, like that, all that should change. The way you treat them is different. Like you are friends. They're not like, you know, they can't be on like a pedestal anymore. You know what I mean? Like they can't be your number one priority anymore. Like those kinds of things are what need to change. But if that wasn't the Twitter version, that was like the
I think I summarized GeoCities the Twitter version from that. But so if you're consciously thinking about making it so that you're not still thinking about it, are you then past step one?
No.
Or Brandon's step two?
I think you need to work. I think you reach that step two, that part where you're not thinking about it, in the time of step one.
So like those step are things three you is need the to product, be, and it's not a...
Three is a product, and two is something you work on while one is happening. You know what I mean? It's like, gotcha. If you're going to take 6 months off, in those 6 months, you need to be processing things in the way that, like, you know, like, you need to be moving on with your life. You need to be finding friends. You need to be going on dates. Like, whatever's going to help you get over it. And then, yeah, then, like, maybe there's, like, a barrier between step one and step three where, like, there's a buffer zone where you start kind of texting. Obviously, you need to open the doors back up to make sure that there's not something weird going on or, like, all that comes rushing back in. Once you're sure that the dam's kind of plugged up, then you can progress to three once you're sure that, like, you know, two isn't going to come as a result.
Right, right. Well, that kind of gave me a whole new question, but I don't want to spend too much time on it. So
go.
I'll drop
this will be the
one.
Relationship therapy with indifferent opinions. Go.
Well, I'm just curious, does it have to be a chance meeting that reintroduces you?
No.
Like if one party reached out via text, that doesn't kind of like catch you off guard enough to...
No.
Like, does...
I don't think it matters how you open the door back up. Like, you could even send, like, hey, like, I was just thinking about you. Like, that's not...
Well,
like,
see, that's not... That
see,
doesn't...
you think that's relationship-y. I don't think it is. I don't think it's, like... I think, like, more likely what would realistically happen... Like, when I say thinking about you, what would more likely realistically happen is, like... This shouldn't be a calculated thing. Like, God, it's May 30th. Like, it's time to do it. I think what happens is, like, you reach this place and then, like... You see something on Twitter, you see something online, you're like, God, she would think this is funny. You know, like, I need to tell her this. Like, that's how it actually opens back up.
Okay, so, yep. I mean, so something like that. That's
Brandon's
fine
giving
too.
All visual cues to this podcast. He's giving, like, thumbs up and nods.
I'm trying to visually demonstrate my acknowledgement of your correctness.
On an audio podcast.
Yeah, I don't want to disrupt you in any way. No, I was going to say the same thing. Like, I think the way I handled it was sharing content that we were interested in with right. one another and just being like, isn't this crazy? Literally no opener, just
right.
reinstating the situation and where you each are sharing things with one another. And there was no, if you were literally just sharing a link with someone saying, I thought you would find this interesting, you've already opened up that channel of communication, right. you know, however small of a sliver. And once you have that open, then it can grow from there and you can share more often and then it can turn into a conversation and then it can turn into text messaging.
Right.
However small you need that opening to be, you know, take it. It does not have to be a formal, hey, I just wanted to reintroduce us as friends. Like
right.
that kind of like formality is really off-putting, I think.
Yeah.
But see, that right there, I have no problem with that. But whether I am sending or receiving a text to from an ex that says, I was just thinking about you, that is not successful
that's
navigation.
That's going to throw you way too off.
Yeah,
that's
I agree.
Just, if we
My
haven't
point,
talked,
though, was that,
send me
that's
a text.
That's not the content. My point was like with something that made you like think about them like or like something like, that you had in common, like what I said, like sharing a content or like, this person's coming to town. Like, can you believe it? We always wanted this to happen. Now it's finally happening. You're like, I don't know. Like, I'm just saying, like, something that made you think of them. Like,
I
thinking
think
about you, I could see if somebody says, like, I'm just thinking about you. You're like, ooh. But
Right. And something public like social media, I think, helps a lot also. The text is like, I'm sending this for your eyes only.
Right.
So the social thing is like, hey, everybody else who wants to look at it, also look at it. But I thought you exactly or specifically would like it.
Yeah. Well, guys, that's a milestone. That's a fifth episode of Indifferent Opinions.
Wow. Congratulations. I'm going to have to go and listen to the other four.